Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
It's said our town was founded on an unspoken promise. It's the kind of place that looks wholesome from the outside. Neat fences, tidy lawns, church bells on Sundays, curfew that people actually obey. But underneath it all is a current. Something old, something everyone feels but doesn't name. That's where the box comes in. In Dorvale, when you turn 18, you get a box on your doorstep at sunrise. Always the same. Hand-carved wood, smooth as bone, no latch or lock. Inside is your role. The word that tells you who you are now. It's not symbolic. You don't get a say. Once the box names you, that's it. Everyone says it fits, but the box always knows. My cousin got caretaker. Now she runs the infirmary, even though she used to faint at the sight of blood. My friend Leo got stone layer, even though he couldn't hammer a nail straight, but now he restores gravestones like an artist. They say the box finds the path you were meant to take, that it doesn't make mistakes. I wanted to believe that, but as my 18th birthday crept closer, something in my gut twisted in apprehension, worried that I'd somehow be the only one it gets wrong or sent on a path that would lead my life into misery. A fear I'm guessing a lot of people have. At dinner the night before, my parents acted like it was a graduation. My dad grilled steaks, my mom made that awful potato salad she thinks I like. They kept smiling too much. Afterward, I met up with some friends around the fire pit near the lake. Everyone made predictions, cracked jokes. They said I'd be a brewer, since I always brought the best drinks, or maybe an archivist, because I kept a dream journal when I was 12. Then someone, I don't remember who, raised their cup and said, "Just hope it doesn't say shepherd." Everyone laughed. Even the adults who were passing by smiled, as if it were an inside joke. "Yeah," someone else added with a grin, "if you get shepherd, you have to go to the clearing." More laughed, a little forced. I smiled too, but the joke stuck in my teeth like a seed I couldn't swallow. We don't have sheep in Dorvale. No one farms, and as far as I know, there is no clearing. But everyone knew the joke, played along like it had been passed down with the same care as our lullabies and town ordinances. A tradition missed in my household. That night, lying in bed, I stared at the ceiling and tried not to think about it. About the word, about what it would mean if the box made its first mistake. At home, I brought it up to my parents, but they brushed it off. The way they saw it, it was a legend at this point. It was a warning given in case shepherd came up, but no one had gotten it in decades. So it was thought to be a relic of the past, a job no longer needed in the town. In bed, I kept thinking about it. I imagined opening the box to find something normal, manifesting market like my dad maybe, or chef like my mom. Something safe, something people would nod and smile at, something that would let me fade into the background. At midnight, I heard a soft thud on the porch. I waited 5 minutes before opening the front door. The wind smelled like damp earth. The street was empty. And sitting neatly on the welcome mat, with no signs of a deliveryman, no tracks in the frost, was the box. It was hand-carved, polished smooth, corners slightly rounded, like it had been passed down for generations. Exactly like it had been described. No hinges, lock or markings. I brought it into my room and placed it on the desk. Sat there for a while, just staring at it. I was alone. My parents knew it would be here, but opening your box is a special and private moment. People knew to leave you in solace. It was nerve-wracking. My hands didn't want to touch it. I thought back to the fire pit, to the laughter, to the way everyone had grinned when they said, "If you get Shepherd, you have to go to the clearing," like it was a game with a way to lose. I lifted the lid. Inside, on soft red velvet, was a single folded piece of paper. I unfolded it. One word. Shepherd. Everything in me went still. It felt like all the air had been sucked out of the room, and I could feel my heart hammering in my chest. I read it again, just to be sure. Same word, same tight ink, printed clean, centered. I closed the lid and hid the box beneath my bed. The next morning, I didn't say a word. My parents didn't ask. But my mom watched me too closely over breakfast. Her fork barely moved. Her eyes didn't leave my face. She must have thought I'd gotten something I hadn't expected. But deep down, it felt so much worse. It was common to let someone process what they'd received. It's sometimes a shock. But the fact that it was always right gave parents a credence not to push. Nothing makes a situation worse than making someone defensive. I packed my bag like normal, said I was going to school. I didn't. I cut through the edge of town where the woods started creeping back in, past the old feed shed, past the berry thickets that no one picked from. People of this town never venture far. Hiking trails only circle near the edge of town. There's water close to fish. It's drilled into everyone not to go far into the thickets. A warning that worked here. Part of me felt like it was delusional to find answers out there. But nothing I saw while raised in this town matched the idea of a clearing. So, it had to be out there. Eventually, the GPS on my phone froze, then shut off entirely. After hours of searching, at the end of a forgotten trail, I found it. The place I was never meant to see. The trees opened into a clearing. Animal bones littered the grass in tangled spirals. I don't know what I expected to find in the clearing. What I didn't expect was a man. He stepped out from behind one of the crooked trees, slow and deliberate, like someone long unused to being seen. His skin was dry and colourless, eyes yellowed at the edges. Thin, trembling hands held nothing, but still twitched like they were used to carrying weight. He looked surprised to see me. "You lost," he grumbled. "No, I don't think so," I stumbled back. This was true. Though I didn't know what I was looking for, I knew I was looking for something, and I could only guess that I'd found it. He paused at this, weighing what I'd meant, maybe even doing some threat assessment. He looked like he hadn't been around anyone in years. I could have stood there, trying to ramble an explanation, but instead, I reached slowly into my pocket and pulled out my note. Once he saw what was neatly written in the center, he sighed and sat down on a stump, like standing took too much out of him. "You weren't supposed to be chosen," he said. "Not yet." I asked him who he was. He gave me a look like I should have known. "I'm the Shepherd," he said. "Or was, or still am, technically." That didn't make sense. I'd never seen him before in my life. He explained, he has the role. It's not like any ordinary job in the town. Only one can have it. Most people assumed he left town after his box arrived, but he didn't leave. He'd been hiding, skirting the boundaries. He looked at me with a kind of grim curiosity. If you got your box, and I'm still breathing. He didn't finish the thought, but I got it. Whatever force governs the boxes, whatever makes them accurate, infallible, it shouldn't have chosen me. Not until he was dead. And yet, it had. He didn't speak much after that, just led me through a twisting animal path behind the clearing, deeper into the woods than I thought they went. The trees here were old and gnarled like fists. The sky disappeared above us. Everything smelled like copper and wet ash. We reached what looked like a collapsed shack, tucked into a hollow. This disgusting place is where he lived. I tried to imagine calling that place home, but the idea sickened me. Inside, buried beneath a tarp and stacks of mold-darkened crates, was a journal. He set it on a stone, opened it to the first page. The pages were warped, some torn, some stuck together. The cover was stained with something reddish-brown and long-dried. I didn't ask what it was. Maps, names, drawings, instructions, a lineage of entries, different handwriting, dates going back generations. This is the shepherd's record, he said. Your job now. He flipped to a marked section, a diagram of the town perimeter covered in strange symbols and notations. Beneath it, a short, tight sentence scrawled in angry strokes. Maintain the boundary. I asked him what that meant. He didn't answer directly. Instead, he turned the page, showed me a list, dozens of entries. It detailed a busy schedule. Every day there was an entry, sometimes two or three. The details were cryptic, only listing an amount of tasks completed, nothing on what happened. But pressing him for answers proved fruitless. All that was stressed was the importance of the job. Was this it? Living alone and working every day? Some thankless job in the middle of nowhere? I would have preferred to be a janitor. At least then I'd be able to see my friends, have a social life. But if I ignored the role, the boundary would apparently fail, whatever that meant. If I left, the town would somehow suffer. And if he died, if anything happened to him, it would fall to me. No backup or replacement. A life of solitude. Just me. He gave me some parting words for me to figure out. If you see one, come to me. I left, dissatisfied with what I was hearing. My curiosity turned sour, making me want to see if I could somehow change my role. That night, I woke to a sound like leaves being raked across the porch. I got up and looked outside. There was something standing in the yard. My fingers stiffened against the sill. My tired eyes slowly adjusted, my mind desperate to make the shape into a tree or a shadow. But it remained as it was, upright, pale, with a huge grin. It stood there, as still as a statue, watching, waiting. The longer I stared, the more I became aware of the fact that I was standing directly in front of a lit window. If it hadn't noticed me yet, I was giving it every chance. I backed away from the window slowly, trying not to make the floorboards speak. When I finally reached the bed, I eased myself under the covers and stayed perfectly still, my heart thudding so loud it felt audible. I lay there, staring at the ceiling, listening for any shift outside. By dawn, it was gone. No signs that something was rummaging in the yard. I ran back to the clearing. The old shepherd was already awake, waiting at the fire pit, like he knew I'd come. "I think I saw one," I said. He nodded slowly, then grabbed a canvas bundle from behind a tree. Inside, rusted tools, something like a branding iron, and a long iron stake carved with symbols I couldn't decipher. He seemed to be able to track it like a bloodhound. We found the thing skulking near the edge of the woods. It was still in the shape of someone, almost human. Same size, same build, but its knees bent wrong, and its eyes were all pupil, no white. It smiled when it saw me. Spoke in the voice of my childhood best friend, a girl who moved away years ago.
"Hey," it said. "Wanna play?"
she added with a smile. Her cadence was just like how she sounded many years ago. My blood ran cold. The old shepherd didn't hesitate. He charged, drove the stake straight through its gut. It shrieked, curled backward like a snapping twig, but didn't die.
"I don't want to go home yet,"
it whined, twisting its neck toward me.
"Please, just a bit longer."
It laughed as the old shepherd pinned it to the ground, an elation that didn't match what its body was going through. Despite what it was saying, its actions didn't match. Its hands clasped over the shepherd's, pulling the stake further in, like it was welcoming death. Thrashing, death throes that looked painfully stronger than a human that size. It took 2 full minutes to stop moving, catching the shepherd a few times, causing a few nicks and bruises. We burned it. The smoke smelled like copper and roses, but even that acted strangely. Instead of billows and clouds, pushed around by the wind, it rose like a thin pillar into the sky until it dissipated. I was done pretending this was normal. I demanded answers. "Okay, what the hell is going on?" I yelled. "The sheep usually move as a flock, but sometimes a lamb gets astray," he retorted, like that somehow answered my question. Tears welled in my eyes, overwhelmed by taking in so much. "No, enough with being cryptic. This is insane. Why did she sound like my old friend? Am I connected to this?" I jabbed. This seemed to catch his attention. He turned to me.
"You knew her?"
"Yeah, we grew up together, played every other day. Until she moved away," I answered.
"Moved away. Classic," he muttered. "Just explain," I demanded. "She's dead. Died a while ago by the sounds of it. I guess you were too young for your parents to tell you straight. But she didn't move on," he replied bluntly.
I was stunned, soaking in what he said. The body was a shambling husk, but it held what remained of my old best friend, something which we excised into smoke that moved on into some unknown afterlife, if what he was saying was to be believed. I just stared at the embers, at the reality of the situation. I didn't sleep after the whole ordeal I'd witnessed. Not even for a minute. Every time I closed my eyes,
I saw the things I had no way to process, nothing earthly I could relate it to, so I could comprehend the gravity of what was going on. I kept telling myself it didn't make sense, that this was insanity creeping in, my mind snapping after opening the box. But deep down, I knew better. I remembered the creature's voice, the way it smiled like it had teeth behind its teeth. Still, I was resolute. I'm not doing this. So, I decided to leave. No packed bags, just a coat, my ID, and a lie to my mom about heading to the library. I walked to the gas station on the highway where the delivery truck stopped, found a guy loading his flatbed, asked for a ride to the next town. He barely looked at me, just said, "Sure, hop in." We drove in silence. 10 minutes out of town, the trees started to thin, and I saw the county line sign ahead. I actually smiled. I was going to make it out. Then the driver made a weird noise, a kind of sharp, choking hiccup. He leaned forward, fingers twitching on the wheel. "Hey." He made a gurgling sound and slumped sideways, foot pressing the gas hard. We veered onto the gravel, then off the shoulder completely. The truck slammed into a ditch, flinging me into the dash. I blacked out. I woke up in the town clinic. Same floral wallpaper, same scent of antiseptic and old paper, a place I'd been to a few times as a child. My head throbbed, my shoulder was bandaged. A nurse leaned over me, pressing a cold cloth to my cheek. "You're lucky," she said gently. "Only a mild concussion." I tried to sit up. She placed a hand on my arm to keep me still. "You don't get to leave," she whispered. "You've already been written in." And just like that, I knew that whatever path I was forced onto, I was locked in. After the crash and waking up in the clinic, I was sent home the same evening, no follow-ups. No one from town asked if I was okay, only if I was ready, whatever that meant. I tried to pretend everything was fine, that I could still choose a normal life. But that night, I heard something outside. A knock. Slow, deliberate, repeating 3 times. Then silence. I peeked through the curtain and froze. No one was on the porch or the street, but just at the tree line, black against the sky. A figure was waving. The next day, he came limping up my driveway. The old shepherd, gaunt and twitching, cuts along his face, shirt torn like he'd gone through thorns or worse. "You need to listen," he said. His voice was different now, no longer cryptic, no longer in control. He looked scared. "I need your help. I found another one, wandering the tree line. Figured it'll be another easy catch. But it turned on me. It attacked. They've never done that before." I demanded he explain all of it. I was sick of being left in the dark for so long. He wiped blood from his cheek and slumped down on my porch step. "This job isn't easy, but if you were chosen, I guess I have to accept you can handle it," he resigned. "Around the world, death is commonplace. People die, move on, and that's it. But here it's a bit thin. The veil beyond isn't always one way, Sometimes things slip back. I nodded, curious to what he meant. They wander aimlessly, clinging onto relics of their past life, old routines or nostalgic areas. But they can't stay here. They can't find peace. So we help them move on, shepherd them to where they need to be. I was breathless at this. Despite the absurdity of what he was saying, it kind of made sense. It's not easy sometimes. You froze up the other day, recognized your friend. That will happen a lot. People you love, people you grew up with, will pass. And sometimes, they'll linger behind. They will recognize you and greet you like an old friend. But the routine never changes. No matter how hard it is, you have to do what's necessary. This made my heart sink. A stranger I could maybe deal with, but someone I know, a friend or a family member, would tear me apart. It made sense why he chose to live alone. Fewer connections meant fewer attachments, able to dispatch them with more ease. Despite what they say, they don't fight back, ever. You saw with the husk, its mind wanted to wander, but its body knew it had to move on. All we do is guide them there. But, I started, not knowing how to ask, looking at his banged up body. Yeah, I know. But I wasn't lying. They don't attack. I think they just, for whatever reason, rejected me. He looked at me directly, with sincerity in his eyes. I need you to finish my task, one I found near the tree line. That's all. Just one time, and I'll take back over. I stared at him, weighing what he asked. It still felt too much for me, but a one-off I could maybe do. And seeing how banged up he was, knowing that he'd try again if I didn't, I felt like I had no choice but to say yes. I set off for the woods. Before I left, the old shepherd pressed two objects into my hands. A short, wooden stake scorched black and etched with sigils I couldn't read, and a sealed satchel tied shut with wax twine. He held eye contact too long before letting go. "Stay on the marked path," he said. "Don't speak first, don't run, and don't ever lie to it." He didn't elaborate, just turned and left. I was left alone, facing the tree line, the sky behind me turning red. I stepped deep into the forest, further than where the townsfolk walked. The trees were close together, crooked. The air changed fast, damper, smelled like turned soil and copper. As I walked, I started noticing carvings, jagged spirals and almond shapes, like stretched eyes. Some had shallow notches across them like lashes. Finally, I reached a hollow, a sunken depression in the earth, maybe 30 feet wide, with a stone basin at its center. Next to it was an emaciated-looking figure, a husk of a person slapping his hand on the stone. When I got closer, I could hear him saying something. "Last two bowls of pears, last two bowls." He was saying it like he was running a market stall that was about to close. When I remembered Mr. Martin, who passed away a number of years ago. The old man was part of my childhood. He used to give free fruit to kids to, quote, make them grow up big and strong. I approached slowly, trying not to make any sudden movements, but he carried on like he was still doing business. When his hollow sockets locked onto me, recognition spread across his face. Ah, dear boy, did you want an apple? They're fresh, he beamed, just like he used to when he saw me as a kid. My eyes welled as I slipped out the steak, heart beating in the highest gear. My breathing picked up as I stopped in front of him, unsure if I should go through with the grim task I was given. I stared at the steak, willing it to move on its own. The idea of driving it into something that appeared living was beyond what I felt capable of, let alone the familiarity of them. The seconds droned on into minutes as he continued slapping the rock like his old market stand. I can't do it, I muttered to myself, readying to leave. It wasn't causing trouble. What was the harm in leaving it there until the shepherd got better, I thought to myself. But before I could leave, the thing snuck up on me. Its hands clasped over mine, hard, gripping the stake I still held pointed forward. Or would you prefer a banana instead? He muttered. But his voice didn't match his actions. He stepped towards me while pulling my arms in, driving the stake partly into his chest. Shock froze me, but as soon as the adrenaline pumped, I followed through, pushing forward as hard as I could. The husk fell backward, pulling me with it, and I straddled it, keeping the stake's position true, until I could drive it deeper one last time. It thrashed around before finally falling still. I rolled off it, breathing so hard I thought I would pass out, but composed myself before getting back up. I slowly unwrapped the satchel to see what was inside and recognized the contents. It was what the shepherd used to start the fire. To honor Mr. Martin, I set it on the stone he seemed to perceive as his market stall and lit it. It didn't take long to roar to life, and with some effort, heaved the husk onto it, watching the smoke pillar seep into the sky. I paused for a moment to silently remember Mr. Martin before cleaning up and heading back home. I made my way back to town under a sky that felt different, lower somehow. Even the stars looked like they were watching me. People passed me on the street, but something else caught my attention. The rooftops, the shadows between buildings, the gaps between streetlights. In those spaces, I saw them. Figures. Tall, narrow things, just watching. Their eyes didn't glow, but I saw them anyway, like impressions burned into my vision. I didn't know what was happening. I wasn't ready for this. Why were there so many? I needed answers, so I went to the old shepherd's house. I knocked. Nothing. I waited, and still nothing. But I couldn't walk away. My skin itched like something wanted me to understand. So, I opened the door. The house was dim, smelled of dust and cedar. I called out, but there was no reply. I found him in the back room, slumped in a worn armchair. Peaceful, pale, a single candle burned low beside him, almost out. He was gone. I don't know how long I stood there. I don't know what I said, or if I said anything at all. My stomach was hollow. Not sad, just stripped, worried that all the answers died with him. But as I looked around, the markings on the walls, the dozens of stakes lined neatly by the door, and I saw the scattered journals, flicked through some, and everything was in there. What he told me, and more. The scale of the task, the targets to aim for, and the eyes, seeing all those who remain. And it clicked. He had seen the figures too, saw them while I was naively worrying about the one that I had seen. He knew the scope of the job. That's why he didn't take me in, not wanting to burden me with this monumental task. And now, he was gone. I walked home without trying to hide anymore. I met the town's eyes when they glanced up. I saw the way the shadows shifted behind their curtains. I heard the slow rhythm of something breathing beneath the dirt. And for the sake of this man, who had thanklessly done this job for decades, working so long that this role was only a rumor in my generation, I decided then that I would be the new shepherd for this town.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.